Call to order the Board of Supervisors meeting. Everybody please rise for the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
First thing on tonight's agenda is a presentation, an employee service award honoring 40 years of service. Our Ag Commissioner is going to present that.
Chairman O'Brien, members of the board, Mr. Robinson, Mr. Deering, my name's Dennis Gudgel, I'm the Agriculture Commissioner, Stanislaus County. Tonight I have the opportunity to do something I've never done before, and that is to be able to honor an individual for 40 years of service that I think rather than focusing on just the 40 years, it's the individual. I have never in my life worked with an individual that was like Victor Perry. Victor Perry is probably one of the greatest gentlemen that I think that I have ever had the opportunity to work with. I have never in the entire time that I have worked with him or found anybody that has worked with him that has ever heard him say one negative thing about anybody. He has went out of his way to serve the community and other people, even though sometimes they've been rude to him. Victor has been an unbelievable role model for our department. I know of instances where people have actually been very rude to him, and he has turned around and returned that with kindness to help them. So Victor is really a person that anybody that would have an opportunity to meet a person like Victor would find himself really honored to be able to do that. Victor started in 1967 for the department, and he has been to work. He served over on the west side for 35 years before finishing up over here with us on this side of the county. From the first day that Victor went to work, Victor would, on a daily basis, record everything that occurred during that day. I mean everything that occurred during that day. In fact, he has in his possession, not tonight, but the records of the first day that he went to work for the county 40 years ago. He also, just to kind of, you know, Victor has worked for the county older, longer than most of the age of most people that work for me. And the other day what he did, we had a couple new employees that what he did for them as kind of a treat is he went through his records and he pulled the records from the days that he worked in detail on the days that those two people were born. But he really, truly, I can't say enough for Victor. I wish that I had his patience and his servant's heart. We try to emulate what he is. But anyway, it gives me real honor to be able to present Victor to you tonight, because I think of all the people that we have the opportunity to honor, Victor certainly has earned that right to really be recognized. So thank you.
Did he show you what he did on the day you were born, Dennis?
Victor, it's an honor to be presenting this to you tonight. I've heard a little rumor about you recently, though. In your 40 years of service for the county, I understand you have yet to take a sick day. 40 years of service and not sick one day. On behalf of the Board of Supervisors, I want to congratulate you on 40 years of service. Thank you very much for what you do for our community.
I'll invite you to say a few words.
Yeah, just briefly, I'd like to thank the Board of Supervisors for my plaque, my achievement plaque, and that was presented to me. Also, a big thank you to my family for being here and some of my co-workers. Thank you for being here, taking the time to be here. And I also like to thank my other, the management, my fellow co-workers, and my family for always standing by me. I could not do it without you. And Dennis, you're an inspiration to the Ag Department, always striving to protect and promote agriculture, which we need so much. And due to your leadership, you instill on me a positive work ethic. Thank you, Dennis.
Next on our agenda is public comment period. This is a time where any member can address the board on any item that is not on the agenda. I have some specific requests, and we'll be starting with those. Linda Ann Sherman.
Good evening. My name is Linda Sherman. I reside at 1313 Wallen Way, Modesto. This morning, I happened to be at the Stanislaus County Animal Shelter. There is a sign posted on the front door which states that as of October 1st, they will no longer sell skate vouchers over the counter at the shelter, but the vouchers will be available at the county-run clinics, which are held once per month at various cities throughout the county. To remind you, skate stands for Stanislaus County's Alternative to Euthanasia. And the voucher, which costs $50, allows the purchaser to obtain spaying or neutering, a microchip, and a rabies vaccination for a dog or cat at one of about 20 veterinary hospitals in the county. This plan change in procedure is a huge step backward for the county and a complete reversal of the push for at least the last 9 months to utilize the shelter. When I inquired as to the reason, I was advised by a staff member that the allocated funding is running out. In other words, the program is a victim of its own success. I implore you not to let that happen. I am not a statistician, but I'm going to give you a couple of statistics that came from the Animal Advisory Board meeting just this month. In the month of August 2007, 539 vouchers were sold over the counter at the shelter. During that same month, 14 vouchers were sold at the clinic, which was held in Houston. The previous month, 459 vouchers were sold at the shelter over the counter, and only 13 vouchers were sold at the Oakdale Clinic. For the fiscal year July 1, 2006 through June 30, 2007, more than four times as many vouchers were sold over the counter than at clinics. The vouchers are a critical component of the effort to reduce the number of animals born and those that end up dying in the shelter. If this change takes effect as announced, the number of vouchers sold will drop drastically, thus increasing the already overwhelming overpopulation problem. Whatever steps must be taken to find the funding to continue the program as it now exists, I urge you and your staff to pursue. You have previously taken two steps forward by adopting the spay-neuter ordinance and this voucher system. Please stop this giant step backwards. Thank you. Do you have any questions?
Any questions? Thank you, Linda.
Okay, thank you.
Next, I have a request from Darlene Binion.
Hi, my name is Darlene Binion. I live here in Modesto, and I also had read the article about the pound. The reason I'm here is that I called one of the supervisors, I don't know which one, quite a few months ago, because I had an opportunity in Reno. My son had moved to Reno, and two dogs got out. I went to the pound, and I was absolutely amazed to the condition, to what it looked like. They housed not only the dogs that they take in, but also, just like you and the City of Modesto have this building, they also had equal for the pets that survived and were going to be adopted out that they had saved, plus the pound. Well, they gave me a little card, and they said, you can also check the website. Well, the dogs weren't there. And I told my son, which he got on the computer the next day, and they said it would take maybe a couple of days or 2 to 3 days. All of a sudden, by gosh, a little description was off, but there those two dogs were. I was absolutely amazed because they had have a cameraman that comes in and takes their pictures. Well, my son had gone in, got him licensed, you know, it's very windy over the fences, fall down a lot, I guess. But anyway, and also got a chip put in. And, well, he had just come down for a visit and told me the dogs, the fence blew down again, the dogs had got out. Well, he got a call immediately. And, of course, he turned around and says, oh, my goodness, he was grumping and grinding, but he was very glad to have them back. It did cost him, for the two dogs, $90 to get them back. But immediately, the dogs were returned. And so I just thought that it would be very productive if maybe a couple of you members would go up to the Washoe County, look at their facilities, find out how they've laid it out, maybe not make it quite as large as theirs, but maybe to see exactly how they have accomplished all of this. I think it would be a very good education, and I think you would be very impressed because I thought I was in a 5-star hotel. I was just absolutely amazed, and I think every one of you would be also. Any questions about the facilities or anything? I mean, it's gorgeous, and somebody had to put it together, and the people over there, you know, they can probably do the whole, most of the work for you guys. But anyway, after reading the paper, I just want to say I've gotten a lot of dogs from the pound up to 40 years ago, and I've been very impressed with the dogs that I've gotten from the pound. And I just think that the facilities that you have you just have to see. And then come back and look at yours. And I think you guys would be a little embarrassed to be able to have any stray animal go into the facility. Thank you.
Thank you.
Steve Trepp.
Good evening, Board. Thank you for opening the pledge. That's great. I just love that. Just a quick comment, and I might have failed to do this when I was here. I think it was back in May or March, somewhere right around there, regarding Veterans Day. And I just wanted to let you know, since I think I failed to mention this, I wanted to let you know that you're invited to be a part of this. I've got seating arranged for you and your wife, but I don't know if you're able to attend, but if you can let me know. I think Pam might have my phone number so you can reach me. But I just want you to know you're definitely invited to be there, and I want to extend that to you because I'm reserving seats for you. So if I failed to mention that a while back, I want to apologize and let you know that that is for sure. So if you could let me know, that'd be great. So thank you. That's all I needed to say, and I wanted to come in person and let you know that was there. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Steve. Hey. Susan Robinson.
Susan Robinson. My husband and I heard late this afternoon about the skate program no longer being served over the counter to the residents because it's running out of money. He has authorized me to donate $1,000 to the program, and we would like to challenge each member of the board to donate also to the program, matching our donation. We would also like to ask the board to find some discretionary funds to help fund this program through the end of the year and until they can get the next grant in to keep the program going. It's very valuable. It helps to control the population. And we're going to be paying either way, either up front for the spay-neuter or later for the housing and the killing of the animals. Thank you.
Thank you. Deborah Harper.
Hi, my name is Deborah Harper, and I am in between addresses with a P.O. Box 158, Modesto, California, 95353. I have very peacefully and diplomatically attempted to resolve some undercurrent issues in the area, in our community. I'm a very pleasant, positive person that has attempted to resolve these issues privately, writing emails. I have been shut down completely. I've been suspended from Modesto Junior College. I've been suspended from the public library. I have been suspended from the Stanislaus County Law Library. I'm currently under suspension for the second time from the Stanislaus Public Library. I attempted to resolve that through the county CEO's office. Mick Krausnick shut me down. He stopped me and said, stop. So I'm here to peacefully request, okay, let me back up a minute. Today at 12:35, I was at the county law library. I asked peacefully to fit within the guidelines if I could set my bags. I carry my luggage everywhere I go because I'm in between addresses. And I do it as concisely as possible, trying to fit in every rule in this town that comes up and changes every day, which is an awesome thing to try to keep up with. The buses throughout the libraries, and today at 12:35, I requested whether I could leave the bags at the law library while I went and got a cup of coffee in order to continue my research. The law librarian responded to me, please don't start with me today. And I looked at her and I said, I peacefully and respectfully said, a yes or no would be fine. She continued with her attitude, and I have been shy and peaceful the entire time that I've been shut down through this community. And today was like the last straw. I looked at her and I said, you cannot do this. If I am not doing anything out of line, and yet I'm being suspended from all the libraries, JC. I've requested resolution unsuccessfully. I am fearful that with the law librarian's response today to a very benign question, that I'm going to get shut down from the last place I can actually go into to do my research to try to resolve this issue. I have found in the law library the Declaration of Human Rights. That is a priceless piece of information, and I think it needs to go public. Everything needs to go public in this situation now. So I'm requesting that you review the Declaration of Human Rights if we can start utilizing that within the community. We have an awesome community. We have hundreds and thousands of awesome individuals in this community, but things are out of balance. And I do not wish to be suspended from the law library for asking if I can leave my bags, trying to fit into the rules or not. I was finally told, no, you can't. But it was after I let her know that the attitude was not conducive to a peaceful stay at the law library. Now, my second request, now is who and how do I go about getting access? I cannot fall off the planet I can't even move out of county. I consulted an attorney out of the county, and they said, you have to deal with your county because it's involved in your county. I couldn't even get help out of the county. What my request is, what is the process? Mr. Krasnick is not here, so what is the process I need to go through in order to resolve these fabrications, falsehoods, and establish the peaceful path that I'm still attempting to establish? Do I need to come back to somebody on that, or?
We can have Mr. Krasnick contact you upon his return. At this time, my understanding is that there are various requests that you not use those public facilities because of past behavioral issues, and you're on suspension from them. My understanding is that the suspension will be lifted in due course in time, at which time you would be allowed to reutilize those public resources.
Okay, the behavioral fabrications, I was never counseled at any point. I had no clue there was a problem. And I let because I'm peaceful and shy, and in addition to the human rights, my scripture is 1 Thessalonians 4:1-8, how we treat people. It's, you know, I stand by that. And so I would not mistreat anybody in order to, nobody counseled me. You know, nobody mentioned that it was an issue until I was all of a sudden bombarded with all these false accusations. Now that has been a very manipulative tool in the community. I've experienced it over the years. The first suspension at the county public library was 6 months. The suspension at the law library, which is not, you know, it's over except unless it's reinitiated due to the trend that started that I'm trying to dissolve and resolve. So that law library suspension was for 6 months. The second false suspension from the law library, from the county public library, which has the newspaper, the magazine desk, the computer access, all the books and all that research available, which is above and beyond the law library, it's for a year. And that was in June. It's for a year for the entire county. I can't walk into a library anywhere. And that's on false accusations and bombarded accusations. If I were a problematic individual, the procedure would be to say, hey, you know, this is going on, you know, rather than slamming me with complaints and complaints. The final complaint that I had the day that I was finally suspended the second time, I had an individual sit in front of the library, blow smoke in my face, and I peacefully said, you know, there's a whole library, can you please not do that? When I peacefully walked into the library, he followed me in there, caused this huge scene, which was a final scene, because he went and filed a 2-page complaint against me after he blew smoke in my face. The whole entire thing was twisted around. I documented the peaceful, accurate documentation. It was ignored, and yet everyone wants to attack my character in addition to my enduring the drama consistently.
Deborah, from what I understand, you had a question on the process, and we got an answer that when Mr. Krasick returns, he will contact you with the steps required. That's what you asked for tonight, correct?
Correct.
Okay. So Mr. Krasick will be in touch with you.
Thank you.
You bet. Thank you. Those are all the slips I have for public comment. I do have quite a bit for agenda item D1 that we'll address here shortly. Are there any other members of the audience that wish to speak on anything that is not on tonight's agenda? Seeing no one, we will move on to consent calendar. Are there any items to be pulled? Supervisor Grover?
Regarding item C5, we have a relationship business-wise with Applegate Johnson, the contractor that we're recommending the contract for the fence at the landfill. So I need to pull that and step down.
Okay, so pull item C5.
Yes, and I would ask that item D1 be pulled for discussion and a subsequent vote following approval of the consent calendar.
Okay, so I'm looking for a motion to approve consent calendar, less item C5 and less item D1.
Also moved.
Did he say?
Yeah, motion. Go ahead. Go ahead.
Motion by Supervisor Monteith. Is that a second, Mayfield?
Yes, fine.
Second by Supervisor Mayfield. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Passes 5-0. We'll move to item C5. Is there a motion to approve item
C5? Also moved.
Motion by Supervisor Mayfield.
Second.
Second by Supervisor Monteith. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Passes 4-0. Item D1. This is the item where I have numerous requests to speak as well.
I need to, Mr. Chairman, I need to, on advice of counsel, I need to step down on anything regarding D1.
Okay.
So I will be leaving. You can go ahead.
What I would suggest is that since we do have a number of individuals from the audience wishing to speak on this matter, perhaps we could hear their comments and follow with additional comments of the board.
Okay. And I apologize for mispronouncing anybody's name. Tom Teresta?
Good evening, Mr. Chair, board members. Tom Terpstra, 578 Wilma Avenue in Ripon. I represent Salida Hauling, the applicant on this project, and our request is in the form of a letter to you, which I think has been distributed to the board members. I guess even an item as simple as setting a public hearing on a project like this is bound to take on some contentiousness, and we don't wish it to be that way. We would request that the hearing date of October 2nd be maintained for a few reasons. First of all, that is well within the 45 days required under your ordinance. Secondly, to move it to the 16th, as requested by the attorney for the opponents of this project, would put us at a real disadvantage because at least one board member would not be able to be at the hearing that night. He would be out of the country, from what I understand. Another board member apparently has a conflict that would leave us with a three-member board on a project such as this, which would be a direct disadvantage. As far as a night meeting, the Planning Commission meeting occurred at night. There was ample opportunity for public participation. There were probably seven or eight neighbors there that were opposed, and I think my transcript shows seven or eight speakers that spoke. Their comments and certainly the transcript would be available for the board members' review in the event some of them couldn't be there during the morning. But we don't think it puts anybody at a disadvantage. This board has meetings in the morning routinely, and in fact, that seems to be the norm. So we would just request that in the interest of moving the project forward, that it stay on October 2nd as suggested and proposed by your staff. So to move it beyond the 16th, even on to the 23rd, puts us at a real disadvantage, both time-wise and in terms of getting it done in the 45 days set forth in your code. So again, that would be our request tonight, and certainly available to answer questions or comments of the board members.
Very good.
Thank you.
Rosemary Hauser.
Good evening. This evening I come before you and ask that the October 2nd meeting be changed to an evening meeting. I think it's very important for citizens to have an opportunity to attend a meeting. Those opposed are the working class. They're the residents of the neighborhood. They are not, as quoted by Mr. Terpstra, wealthy ranchette owners. I go to work every morning at 5:30. I get off at 6 at night. I cannot attend a morning meeting, and I ask that you provide that opportunity. This has been a long, hard battle that's been fought for many years. We are very passionate about this and what this project will do to our neighborhood. I think that the board should offer us the opportunity to continue to have it an evening meeting so that we can get more public here than attends a daytime meeting. And I ask that you consider that on behalf of the citizens of Stanislaus County. Thank you.
Thank you. Raymond Cimino.
Good evening. I just want to reiterate what my neighbor said, and I would appreciate it on behalf of many of my neighbors there on the west side if you would consider an evening meeting so most of us can attend. This morning is very difficult for a lot of us on that day, October 2nd.
Thank you. Monica Ramos.
Thank you. I am asking also that it be set for an evening meeting. If that particular date is a problem because of other conflicts and personal plans, then maybe we need to look at moving it out beyond whatever. 600 people have signed petitions. There's been reams of paper. Discussion is appropriate. If we weren't interested in discussion, we wouldn't be having an open meeting. And to set a meeting where you know that there's controversy, where you know that there is interest in public wants to be heard and to participate in our open government, we just ask that you set it for an evening meeting.
Very good. Thank you. Robert Ramos.
Yes, my name is Robert Ramos. You don't need my address or When we talked to the Planning Commission, we were told that we had a limited amount of time. And we said, well, there's a lot of things here. We've had two EIRs with the CEQA, but we were limited to what we had to say. And all we request is that we have a sufficient amount of time to do that. And like all the others, most of us work, and to take time off at this to do this is a burden, and we just ask that we get a little more respect from the board to have an evening meeting. There's a lot of things here, and even the Planning Commission stated they couldn't even read everything that was in this. They hadn't seen the project site. They hadn't gone through all the literature. So we just asked that we could have an evening venue to discuss this. Thank you.
Thank you. Anybody else wish to comment on this agenda item? And I will need you to state your name for the record since I don't have a slip, sir.
I'm with the lady that said, you know, we're working people. We can't get over here at 9 o'clock in the morning for this meeting. You know, that is important to you, to them, and he's saying that there's no disadvantage. I think there is a disadvantage. I put it in 9:15. This is the only thing I want to say. I think there is a disadvantage against us, you know, the working people, to come at 9:15. So,
very good.
That's what I want to say.
Could you give your slip to the clerk there so we have your name for the record? Thank you, sir. Anybody else wishing to speak on this agenda item? We'll bring it back to the board at this point. Any comments or motions?
I would like just if I may, summarize the issue as I understand it. The proposal is to set the hearing for October 2nd, 2007 at 9:15 a.m. Supervisor Mayfield has indicated that he does have a conflict and so will not be able to participate in the discussion on any date. Supervisor Grover has indicated that he will not be available to attend the meeting of October 16th. We are working within a 45-day time period that commenced upon the hearing before the Planning Commission, so we do have a limited time. We're faced now with the prospect of a morning meeting on October 2nd with four members present, or an evening meeting on October 16th with three members present, and including one of the absents being the district supervisor representing this area.
Supervisor Grover?
I think this discussion has been on for a number of years now, and it's time to make a decision on it. I'd like to be a part of that decision and ask the board to hold it on October 2nd as proposed by staff.
Supervisor DeMartini?
Mr. Chairman, could I ask the county council what Supervisor Mayfield conflict is? Because you're supposed to give a reason when you have a conflict.
He has an economic conflict under the FPPC rules that would preclude him. His specific conflict is he also operates a hauling operation that's a commercial. He has others that participate in his hauling, in his hauler. In that sense, he's in competition with the Salida hauling proposed project here, in that proposes or offers a conflict of interest that he would have to step down from.
Okay. I just wondered what it was. He didn't state what it was. I think I would tend to agree with Supervisor Grover. This matter has went on for a number of years, and there is no perfect time when you can have a meeting. There's always a good time and a bad time for everybody, and I would be in favor of just going ahead with the December 2nd meeting and get this decided.
Is there a motion?
May I comment?
Please? Yes, sir.
First of all, I have made my mind up on this issue. Being the newest member on the board, perhaps I'm not as informed on this issue as perhaps some of you are. I understand this has been going on for quite some time, but I know that when your people have disagreements, and the gentleman who brought up the handbag with all the information, apparently they feel they've not had an opportunity to express that, as I understand it. And we have held meetings in the evening to accommodate in the past. And I personally feel that I don't have a trouble with trying to get people involved in this, and I would prefer to have it in the evening when it would be the opportunity for other people to speak it who live in the area. I understand the problems, but I do feel that I know I'm asking people for additional information. Maybe my circumstance is such that coming on the board the first year, I haven't been around in all of this discussion, and I admit that. I will say, for those who have information, do not wait until the day of the hearing to provide us with the information. And if you're going to give us information, you should give us plenty of time to read it and review it. And if that information is given to us the night that we're asked to make a decision, we're never going to be able to get to it. So I lean in the direction of making an evening meeting on this discussion, but I do understand the complications. But if we could, I would appreciate if we could make it available.
I'd like to move approval of staff recommendation to hold the hearing on October 2nd.
I have a motion to approve D1.
Second.
And a second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
Passes 3-1 to set the hearing at 9:15 on October 2nd. This time we'll invite Supervisor Mayfield back and move to a scheduled matter at 6:40 p.m. We'll adjourn the Board of Supervisors meeting and convene the In-Home Supportive Services Public Authority. We'll call that meeting to order. And we'll start with consent calendar. Consent calendar consists of the approval of minutes. Is there a motion to approve consent calendar?
So move.
I have a motion. Is there a second?
Second.
And a second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Passes 5-0. Agenda item 5, approval of the In-Home Supportive Services Public Authority of San Francisco County Administrative Rate.
Good evening, Mr. Chairman, members of the board, Chief Executive Robinson, County Council Doring, Jeff Lambaron, Executive Director of the Link to Care In-Home Supported Services Public Authority of Stanislaus County. And I'm going to brief PowerPoint, so I'm going to move over to the desk.
The request before you, the request before you tonight is to approve an administrative rate increase for the public authority. Give you a little background. The administrative rate is the rate the state will allow us to claim for reimbursement for administrative activities. Our normal sharing formula, 50% of the costs are reimbursed by the federal government, 32.5% by the state, and approximately 17.5% by the county. And then in 2005, we met with the State Department of Social Services. Up until that point, many of these functions had been performed by the In-Home Supportive Services Program. At that time, when we indicated that we had formed the public authority and were moving in that direction, they indicated that certain activities that were performed by In-Home Supportive Services and claimed for reimbursement by them could no longer be claimed for reimbursement, but that they could be claimed by the public authority. Anything related to the employer of record, things specifically employer of record is the wage negotiation, the recently approved memorandum of understanding with the United Domestic Workers. registry operations. These are things where this is basically our referral service where we provide care providers for IHSS consumers, performing background checks, training registry providers, and many other administrative activities. And how is the administrative rate increased? Basically, it requires authorization from the Board of Supervisors and the Public Authority Board. It requires a line item budget, a state form, a letter from the director of the Community Services Agency, and then it takes approximately 2 months for the state to approve the rate increase. Why are we doing this? Basically, it allows us to support ongoing activities, and mostly it's due to growth in staffing, claiming of staffing time. The reason that we're bringing this item, it was approved as part of the final budget hearing. It seemed inconvenient to stop the budget hearing or conduct other business on that day, so we requested that we bring the item tonight. And so we're seeking the board approval as the public authority board. And just to let you know how it occurs, basically we take the budget, which was the approved in the final fiscal year 2007-2008 budget, and divide that by the projected individual provider hours, and then we get an administrative rate of 32 cents. And then a little chart to let you see how it's gone. So in fiscal year 2004-05, it was basically four individuals, the public authority staff. In 2005-06, not only the public authority staff, but additional individuals at the Community Services Agency who perform activities on the public authority's behalf. And then from there, we had a rate increase to 27 cents. And then finally, fiscal year 2007-08, we're requesting a rate increase to 32 cents. And this is the staff of the public authority, myself, a confidential assistant, an accountant, a home care assistant who performs our registry activities, and then an administrative clerk, which the board kindly approved in fiscal year 2006-07 at mid-year. And then the other staff that we get services from them, we have another accountant in the in-home supportive services program that assists with some of the activities there, a confidential assistant 5 who does some administrative activities for us, almost 5 other home care assistants who perform other activities. And the things that they do is they assist with the registry providers and other providers, helping them complete paperwork, answering questions, checking in on the quality of the program. We have some assistance from another manager, administrative backup. We have the nursing assistants, which the board had approved. These are the individuals who, if there is not a registry provider available and there is an emergency need, they can go out and assist the consumer. And then some more administrative staff, a social worker 4, and a social worker supervisor who supervises the nursing assistants. And so we're asking that the Public Authority Board approve the administrative rate increase. Happy to answer any questions.
Are there any questions of staff? Is there any member of the audience wishing to comment on this agenda item? Is there a motion?
I move for approval.
Second.
I have a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Passes 5-0.
Thank you.
Thank you. Next on this agenda is a public forum for the In-Home Supportive Services Public Authority. Does anybody wish to comment? Seeing none, we'll adjourn from this and reconvene the Board of Supervisors meeting. And we'll move to item B5, consideration of Mental Health Board Annual Report.
Good evening, Mr. Chairman, members of the board, Mr. Robinson, County Council. I am Madeline Schlepper, the Associate Director for Behavioral Health and Recovery Services. In meeting one of their statutory duties, the Mental Health Board is prepared to submit to the board an annual report on the needs and performance of the county's mental health system. Before I introduce the chair of the Mental Health Board, I'd like to acknowledge two of the many activities that they have performed in the past year.
First, they've been extremely helpful in assisting BHRS with our ongoing implementation and planning for the Mental Health Services Act. Secondly, in view of all the challenges that our director, Ms. Hunt, has informed you of over the past year, the Mental Health Board recognized that staff may be under a great deal of stress. So in concert with the Advisory Board for Substance Abuse Programs, they went to all of our staff meetings and presented every staff person in the department with a certificate of appreciation for a job well done. This was incredibly significant to our staff, and I want to thank them for that effort. Now I'm pleased to introduce the chair of the Mental Health Board, Ms. Shirley Forrester, who will sort of orchestrate the report tonight and answer questions that you may have.
Good evening, gentlemen. It is my pleasure to be here. I'm Shirley Forrester. I have a background in nursing and behavioral science, and I've been on the board now for 4 years. As Madeline said, we are here to give you an overview and present a few things because this is a very lengthy report. And one of our responsibilities is to give you this report, and it's our honor to be here again. Our board meets monthly to bring attention to mental health issues, and each member of the board is to participate in at least one of our 7 standing committees designed to focus on more detailed components of what we are to do. We've been working very hard on getting all the members involved in committee work. It is my contention that that's where the work gets done, is in the committees and not at the full board meetings. The Mental Health Board also has met twice yearly with the Advisory Board on Substance Abuse Programs to address issues around co-occurring disorders, meaning mental health and alcohol and drug abuse. We are responsible to be a liaison to you as our Board of Supervisors, and we are also tasked with identifying issues affecting the community as it relates to mental health needs for consumers and those who advocate for them. I want to publicly thank Linda Torres, who is our liaison person between the department and our board, and all of the mental health department staff who have helped us in many ways. Our board has always had more than its share of family members and consumer members, but we continue to be challenged by ethnic diversity. A high priority for us is to try to get a mix of community people that correlate with those who live in this community. We have been successful in recruiting 2 new Latino members in the last year. We also wish to maintain the balance of men and women on the board. Currently, we're seeking a woman from the Asian community, a person from the faith-based community, and we would like to have a young person between the age of 16 and 20 to represent that age group. So if any of you know any of those 3 categories of people, we'd be happy to talk with them. Now I will talk a little bit about the adult system of care. This serves people between the ages of 18 and 60. This system continues to go through great changes. Budget reductions continue to impact our services for those with a serious mental illness now for the 4th consecutive year. Last year, this system of care saw the closing of 3 of 6 of our outpatient regional clinics. The site closures were in the communities of Patterson, Ceres, and Oakdale. Adjustment to these reductions has been difficult, but it has proceeded relatively smoothly due to dedicated efforts of staff. The cities of Oakdale, Ceres, and Patterson still have some psychiatric appointments for consumers offered in these locations. Peer support groups are available as well. However, the overall capacity of the regional team system has decreased by over 350 treatment slots. This is nearly a 30% reduction in the service capacity for the adult system of care. Medi-Cal recipients and other high-risk individuals have been prioritized to receive services first. Alternative referrals to other community providers are being made for those consumers who cannot be served. The adult system of care has significantly expanded housing opportunities for mental health consumers by increasing the number of transitional and permanent housing units currently available to this population. This past year, the greatest growth has been in permanent housing. Challenges for the adult system of care: focus around employing consumers, supported a housing system that works for these people, providing culturally competent services, and a wellness recovery approach and continued use of the milestones in recovery, and increased peer and family involvement, including expanded use of support groups. We are also challenged with maintaining a collaborative relationship with psychiatric hospital staff as the hospital transitions now from behavioral health and recovery services to DMC. At this time, I would like to introduce Nathan, who is a person who has received services under the adult system of care.
How y'all doing? My name is Nate Ellis. I only have a little bit to talk about, but I came from San Francisco. I've been out here for about 4 years. I was homeless. I was confused. Somebody introduced me to Turning Point, and from Turning Point, I began to join their programs, and I identified my illness, and from there, I got a job, and from there, it was uphill. They helped me, they sit down, and they counseled me, and they helped me to identify my sickness that I had that I always tried to cover up and stuff like that, and I've been going with the program for about almost a year and a half. I moved on. They helped me get my job skills and stuff like that. So from there, I got this other position. And the program that I found out here, I never thought that I would be able to find it because I didn't know nobody out here. I didn't try to get to know nobody out here. I didn't know that I had an illness until, you know, they told me, you know, because I guess they work with a lot of people who just like me. I'm 26 right now, but it's kind of hard to, you know, think like I have an illness and deal with it, but through Turning Point, through Common Ground, through the programs that I've been going through, they really is like a family that I ain't never had in my life. Now I got my own apartment. I'm working full time, trying to find me a better job, probably to become a counselor or talk to the youth or something like that. Because I have a history of just like, stuff that I ain't never sat down and talked to nobody about, and it built up and it just almost killed me. I got high blood pressure. They, you know, came to the hospital and, you know, cheered me up. And I mean, it was a family, and they still is a family. And to this day, I still could come there and get the advice to go back out into society. And I'm in church and, you know, stuff like that. But, I have a daughter, and I'm trying to raise her the best way I can. I'm still trying to find a better job, and I put God first, and this is my first time speaking, so I'm kind of nervous, but it just, you know, the programs that they got is, like, you know, 100% good, because I can't speak on everybody. But I know it helped me out, and, you know, if I put my foot work into it
And, you know, they're going to, you know, help me, guide me and stuff too. So, I don't know. That's all I really have to say.
You did a great job speaking today. Great job.
Chip Langman will now speak about the older adult system of care.
Good evening, Chairman, distinguished members of the board. I'm here this evening to report on the progress and successes of the Mental Health Department's Senior Access Teams and Older Adult Systems of Care, which, as you know, are dedicated to serving those seniors of Stanislaus County classified as affected by mental illness. Rather than bore you with numbers and statistics, I'd like to focus on one prime example of why this system is an incredible success. Karen became a client of the Senior Access Resource Team about a year and a half ago. She grew up in a home with a mother who, much like herself, had severe mental illness. This mother-daughter household was able to live in seclusion for many decades with less outside contact in a 40-year span than you or I might experience in one single week. You met a gentleman at the beginning of the meeting who had 40 years without a sick day. This is a woman who had 40 years with not a single average day. This woman and her mother literally sat in their house alone with nothing but their thoughts and the voices inside their heads to entertain them. You may ask how two adults could live in seclusion for so long without drawing any attention. I asked the same question earlier this afternoon. Everyone has to go to the grocery store. Everyone has to pay bills. Everyone has to have some sort of outside contact on a regular schedule. These two actually bartered with neighbors to have bare necessities delivered to their homes so they could avoid contact with the outside. Imagine growing up in this environment. You never go outside. The only conversations you have are with yourself or what's inside of your head. Most likely, the only contact with people outside of your home is when being admitted to the behavioral health center. This was Karen's life for nearly half a century. It took almost a year for the experienced and dedicated staff of the Senior Access Resource Team, SART, a 24-hour, 7-day-a-week staff dedicated to the most severely mentally disabled patients in the county, to quote-unquote, break bread with Karen. She was untrusting and had no idea how to interact with other people. She couldn't carry on a conversation and would most likely become loud and fit-ridden just to avoid human contact. The SART team worked hard to gain her trust and began a slow and deliberate conversing pattern. Eventually, they were able to take Karen from her tragic situation to her current state of affairs. Today, Karen understands the necessities of good hygiene, clean clothes, conversation, and has even gone on a job interview. These are things that you and I do daily without any thought. While she may never be assimilated the way most people deem conventional, she is, in fact, light years ahead of her prior situation, a situation that would either result in continual stays at the behavioral center at an ever-escalating cost to taxpayers, or even more tragic circumstances. I brought tonight some pieces of Karen's artwork, which by far the biggest tangible proof of her incredible progress. She's gone from not being able to sit for any short length of time to enjoying socially adaptive art classes. I brought each of you a separate piece, which hopefully will be placed in your offices and serve as a reminder of just what your actions as local leaders can produce in the lives of those who are most directly affected by your decisions. I brought one for each of you. And again, this is done by a woman who could barely hold a conversation, and a year later, she's actually out in public enjoying art classes and able to carry on conversations and do day-to-day routine tasks. So on behalf of the older adult system of care.
Chip, before you give those to Christine, could you just hold each one of them up?
Sure,
that way the camera can see them and the people watching can see what we're looking at.
I have a number of pieces of her work. And one final one. I'll let you all fight over which one is.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Chairman gets to sit first.
I think you're exceeding your duty there.
Tyler Downing will now speak about the forensic services.
Good Good evening, Mr. Chairman and members of the board. I'm a newly appointed board member. I participate in as many of the committees as I possibly can be. One of them being the Criminal Justice Oversight Committee, which oversees the forensic services. Forensic services is a new system of care for BHRS. The Criminal Justice Oversight Committee is a relatively new committee. A few of the pieces that Forensic Services see is a crisis intervention training, which is a 40-hour class for local law enforcement agencies. We're viewing this as a huge success. We're trying to do it twice a year. We have three academies successfully completed so far. The goals of the training academy is to reduce use force incidents by officers, reduce related injuries by officers and citizens, decrease the frequency and amount of time officers spend responding to calls and services to the mentally ill population. One personal experience I've heard about is that an officer that completed the first training academy, since he's acquired these skills, he has not had to be able to use force on any of these calls for the mental health or mental health members of the community. So I'm viewing that as a huge thing. One thing is the mental health court has now been implemented on April 27th. It's huge. It's to keep the mental health board members out of the mission of Santa Claus County's mental health court has told individuals accountable while enlisting their participation in flexible and intensive treatment programs tailored to their specific assessed needs. There's counties, local counties, neighboring counties, counties from the Bay Area coming in to Stanislaus County and looking at this program saying we're doing a great job. And also the integrated forensic teams as part of the forensic overview. The Integrated Forensic Team is a Mental Health Service Act funded program. Services include crisis response, peer support, and alternatives to jail, reentry support, and housing and employment services. So I haven't been involved with this committee a whole lot, so I hope I was fairly clear on what we're trying to accomplish here, and I thank you.
Thank you.
Robert Angel will speak about the children's system of care.
With respect to time, I'll just brief our annual report. The budget for the Children's System of Care is $17,331,421. The services were provided were for 4,409 individual clients served and 109,308 services provided. Our priorities and outcomes. The Children's System of Care evaluates its performance in a number of areas, and these outcomes are guides in which Children's System of Care develops strategies for successful service provision. With 14 years of data collection and experience, there's a wealth of information to include the following. Reduction in out-of-home placement. Currently, Stanislaus County has the lowest out-of-home placement rates in the state for placements in the highest level of care. No children from Stanislaus County reside in the highest level of care community treatment facilities, and no children from Stanislaus County have ever entered state hospitals in over 10 years. Currently, 90% of the children active in treatment this past year remain at home. Increase in client functioning. Currently, 53% of the children have significant improvement in functioning. This is an increase of 5% from last year. Reduction in recidivism. Currently, 92% of the youth served in juvenile justice mental health system have not reoffended. 90% of the youth discharged have no reoffense in 6 months post-treatment. These rates have been at 85 to 90% in the past last six fiscal years. In juvenile drug court, 92% of the clients who have graduated have not reoffended. 81% of the drug tests were negative. 6 clients have graduated juvenile drug court. Stay in school. 92% of the students have attended over 80% of the scheduled school days. This goal has been at 85% higher for the past 6 fiscal years. Client satisfaction. Currently, 84% of the youth and caregivers are satisfied with services, up 6% from last year. Youth are satisfied at the rate of 84% and the caregivers at a rate of 85%. Our cultural competency. The Children's System of Care has a very diverse staff. All programs are bilingual, clerical support, and a minimum of 1 full-time staff person on all job classifications per program are bilingual Spanish. Currently, the diversity of 90 staff employed by the Children's System of Care is as follows. Hispanic, 32.5%. African American, 10%. Portuguese, 4.4%. Assyrian, 1.2%. Native American. Caucasian, 54%. Southeast Asian, 3.6%. Ethnicity of clients. Currently, the Children's System of Care serves the following diverse client families. Hispanic is 37%. African American is 7.2%. Asian American, 2.3%. Native American, 1.2%. Caucasian, 50%. The focus in regards to cultural competency will include a better presence of the Southeast Asian community, increasing the number of bilingual speaking staff. As the Children's System of Care has successfully increased access to more Hispanic families, increased efforts will be made in recruiting multilingual staff. With hiring freezes and fiscal deficits, this will be a challenge, but it is an important focus. Continuing training of staff in a variety of areas related to cultural competency is ongoing, with additional training in spirituality, clinical practice, and customer culture. Thank you.
Yep.
One brief comment about Stanislaus Behavioral Health Center. With the closure of the Children's Psychiatric Unit, the Aspira Stabilization Program was developed to divert youth to this highly intensive alternative in-home program to avoid out-of-county hospitalizations for children and youth. This has been a very successful alternative. There is a lot of information in the report about the MHSA Act. I understand Denise Hunt was here recently and talked about that. I'm not going to touch it because you've heard it once. That's enough. A big challenge for us is that the Mental Health Board members are very invested in ensuring that the psychiatric hospital provides excellent care and treatment when the sale of SBHC to Doctors Medical Center is finalized. 4 of us on the board have met with Mr. Litos, the CEO at DMC. We had a very positive interaction with him. We requested that the Mental Health Board be represented on the new advisory board that will be formed. So we're hoping to be active in that. That's all I have to say. Do you have any questions about anything?
Any questions? Comments?
Comments, absolutely. Well, first of all, I want to thank all of you. I have the opportunity to be on the board with you. There are many more glamorous subjects, but I don't think there's any more important subject. And I want to commend each and every one of you, because everyone on that board is involved personally. It's a want to, not a have to. And as we struggle in trying to address the challenges that we have, you're doing it with the consideration, with the means which we have, which we always are short on, which you're also involved with the individuals, and you address the needs of each and every patient with their individual needs, knowing that we're trying to address the problem of many people. So I just want to commend you in your presentations tonight and the work that you constantly do, and we want to thank you. And thank you for the report.
Thank you very much. Thank you for listening and for partnering with us on what we consider to be a very important thing.
Very good. Thank you for a very well-presented presentation. Was that a motion, Mr. Monteith?
So moved. Second.
Motion and a second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Passes 5-0. Thank you very much. We move to correspondence.
This board has received a copy of the Diabetes, the Growing Epidemic, a health policy research brief from the University of California, Los Angeles.
Refer to Health Services Agency.
This board has received a copy of the 2006-07 Chancellor's Annual Report and Honor Roll of Donors for the University of California, Merced.
We acknowledge the report.
This board has received 3 notices from the State of California Fish and Game Commission regarding regulatory actions related to ecological reserves, prohibition against feeding big game mammals, and sports fishing cleanup regulations.
Refer to the Fish and Wildlife Committee and the Department of Parks and Recreation.
This board has received the claims as noted on the agenda.
We acknowledge receipt of claims and refer to the Chief Executive Office Risk Management Division. Are there any Board of Supervisor reports?
No, I don't have a report. I have to ask the question of County Council. When I left the diocese on that one D1, was I supposed to tell you exactly what my conflict was?
Yes, you're supposed to identify what the particular conflict was that causes you to step down.
Well, but you did it.
I did it after the fact, yes.
After the fact. Okay. So from now on, when anybody has a conflict on this board, then before they leave, they have to tell exactly what it is.
Well, I don't know what you mean by exactly, but
saying, they have to tell you what their conflict is.
Correct.
Okay.
Any other board reports? Legislative Fiscal Management Report, Chief Executive Officer.
Nothing this evening.
This meeting is adjourned.